If you are able, would you please remain standing while we read the gospel reading? It comes from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 17. If you read through the book of Matthew, you would know that this picture of the transfiguration, which we're about to look at, comes right after the declaration where Peter declares that Jesus is the Christ. So it climaxes with a word or an expression to his identity and then an experience of it. 6 days later, after this, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up to a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun. His clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." And while Peter was still talking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." And when the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them and said, "Get up, don't be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one now except only Jesus. Grass will wither, flowers will fade away, but the word of the Lord will live forever. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. I imagine some of you have taken backstage tours or looks into places like Progressive Field or The Q or a Disney Insider tour, maybe a nook and cranny tour of an old cathedral or famous mansion. Have you ever gone backstage and seen what really goes on beyond the performance? And then once you've seen that, you can hardly ever picture that place the very same way again after that. Remember ever seeing possibly a making of Star Wars kind of documentary, and then once you see Star Wars again, you just think, really? Seen that? I mean, it loses some of its luster, or at least it gives you an insider feel to what's really going on. Do you remember The Wizard of Oz, where Dorothy and her companions brought the broom of the Wicked Witch and were terrified by the great and terrible Oz? Remember, through all the puff and smoke, the little dog Toto runs over and pulls the curtain back, hence the famous saying, "Don't look at the man behind the curtain." And in the middle of the scene, one comes to the understanding that there is no promise in this wizard. There is nothing great nor terrible about him. A peek behind the curtain reveals, even while still the smoke and fury fumes, that the great and powerful Oz is nothing but an impotent traveling huckster from Kansas. And there is really nothing to be afraid of. Ironically, you're probably wondering, how in the world are we going to transition this? Ironically, the transfiguration of Jesus is a chance for an insider to peek behind the veil, to pull back the curtain on the very nature and person of Jesus. He, ironically, juxtaposed to the wizard, seems to be a normal man and in reality full of promise and glory and fire and smoke and power. Once the disciples have peeked behind the veil, nothing will be the same ever again. The veil is pulled back on this mountaintop, and there is no fog in terms of their understanding of his nature and his person, no obstructions. Just for a moment, the mountain makes utterly clear a vision of who Jesus is and what he's about. There are moments we are given in our lives where we can see things clearly, unobstructed, perspective that rivet our attention just for a moment, and we can see what lies on the other side of the mundane and the boring and the ordinariness of life. A thin place that awakens in you the preciousness and the fragility and the beauty of what our life is really supposed to be about beyond the routine and the mundane and the boring. So I heard a story of a mom who was once a little girl. She said she remembered her own mom tucking her coat around her, bundling her into a car, and snapping her seatbelt. And then when the mom touched the brakes, she put out the hand, and this little girl, this woman, she said she remembers the tenderness of her mom's hand flashing out to stop her from her forward motion. As the little girl grew into a woman, she remembered taking her own daughter, wrapping her in a coat, buckling her in a seatbelt, and when she would touch the brake, she would put an arm out and their eyes would meet, and she would remember a moment of tenderness with her own mom. And then she said it happened. It really happened. In a moment where she didn't really quite know the depth of it, her own daughter helped her to button her coat because her fingers were sore. And then when she couldn't find the seatbelt, her own daughter buckled it for her. And then when her daughter touched the brake and the hand went out and their eyes met, this woman knew in a moment, just in one of these moments, how precious, how valuable, and how fast life passes for all of us. Where have the decades gone, she wondered. And then she thought, one day it will not be a car seat, but maybe a hospice scene where I'll want to say to this little girl who grew into womanhood, you are bigger and stronger than I, and in this moment, I am so pleased with the woman you have become. A vision of how important life can be, just a moment, just a millisecond sometimes, that centers us around that life is more than what we buy at a mall, and life can give us more than what we can achieve at work. Jesus pulls back the curtain and shows himself changed, transfigured. Literally in the Greek it said he was metamorphosed, which means he was changed or altered from the inside out. Explained with some poverty of words, poor Matthew said his face shone something like but not equal to the burning of the sun, and his clothes dazzled with a hue that can't be described. Throughout the life of Jesus, he manifested his splendor and majesty in the goodness and beauty of grace and in the tenderness of touches with people who didn't deserve it and with serving people that he was really above. But now in this moment, when he was once cloaked in the disguise of a human being, the inside of his beauty becomes manifest on the outside. And the disciples peek into the real nature of Jesus. I wonder when I have a moment or two, just moments, when life seems to be more congruent for me, why don't we hear more from God? George Bernard Shaw once, and I quote, why doesn't he just give us more evidence? Why doesn't he show up like a mile-high green giraffe and just do something? In his words, I wonder, is it because of the worldly wax that's in my ears that I'm unable to hear? Is it because of the scales of my eyes that I can't quite see and experience these moments more often? Or is it maybe, honestly, that God in his wisdom and mercy and grace insulates us from this music and puts cotton in our ears spiritually, for to live in these moments would maybe drive us mad? Maybe such light would blind rather than to illuminate. Maybe if I could see the dimensions of heaven right now swirling around you, in favor of you, for the love of you, if I could see how important you and each other and our mission were really about, I wonder, honestly, would I never eat or sleep or work or have children or raise them ever again? For maybe he who sits in laughter over the joy of his creation knew or could see the pitiable love that we have for others that we snub or dislike or come in contact with. If we could hear the music, if we could peek behind the veil more often, it might be an unbearable weight of glory for us. It really honestly might be if we could have a moment anytime we wanted, a moment of seeing the work of God around us, I think it would be like maybe a dancing elephant sitting on a bug, or a flame that draws a moth to consume it If we were to survive this angel-haunted universe in which we live, maybe it's healthy to be somewhat deaf and dumb at times and wander around like a mute idiot, as I am. Some of you can change these experiences into Brandenburg concertos or Mona Lisa's pictures or a morning anthem. Some of you can. Take these moments and hold them for us. When the disciples experience this and Moses shows up mysteriously in the mist, this lawgiver, this one who has overheard the framework or the skeleton of the measure of goodness, this one who receives the way in law and in word for us, who comes with rational, objective truths, now yields to the one who embodies being the way to those objective truths. Elijah, the great prophet who spoke in fire, intuitive, relational, passionate, holistic, who called God's people back to the standard of Moses. Jesus now will converse and reconcile these two hemispheres into all things. And Peter, do you love Peter? I think he's one of these, don't just stand there and look stupid. Say something stupid too to match the look. Well, he says, Jesus, why don't we build a church here or something to memorialize the past? Why don't we ritualize this? Why don't we institutionalize this? Why don't we grub up some things to put it here so that anytime we want, we can come back and see a little building and make ourselves feel better about what used to be in the past? And in the midst of Peter's rambling and prattling comes a voice and a mist that overshadows him. Aren't you glad? Aren't you glad that God loves ridiculous people and people who just don't get it? I am, honestly. Sometimes I'm so very thankful that even in the midst of my ignorance and unawareness, the gentleness and tenderness of God's mist still surrounds and just says simply, listen to him, is what the voice says. Winnie the Pooh, one of my favorite theologians, says, and I quote, "You know what the problem with humans are? Is that they talk to animals, but they never really listen to them. In fact, the real problem," says Winnie, "with humans is that they never quite listen to anybody or anything." Well, my mom always said that we really do have two ears and one mouth for a reason. Dave, she would say, especially Dave. It was said of Abraham Lincoln, he listened so carefully to people that he exhausted the speaker. Oh God, I think, help us to shut our pie holes once in a while and learn to listen. There Peter is, reciting his religious jargon, offering religious interpretations, and he's still, this is my made-up Greek word for Peter, acluistic. A meaning the opposite of, having a clue. Peter, pick up the phone and please be quiet. The Spirit is whispering to him on that mountain. A nurse who had been to Africa with me said on the way home in the plane, "Dave, my life has been changed here." I said, "Marie, how?" She said, "Well, I don't know, you idiot. I haven't lived my life yet." It takes some time, doesn't it, in retrospect, to figure out what these moments mean and how they're to change our life and how we're to live them out. Lovingly and beautifully, the glory of God encompasses the dim-witted disciples and simply whispers, "Just be quiet, honey. In time, you'll begin to see a bit more of the mystery and why it is that we are where we are." This idea of the glory of God enshrouding, it's a weird thought, isn't it? Sometimes I get real churchy about it. And not having been raised in the church, this term, the glory of God, it conjures two images. First, it conjures fame. People that have glory are famous. And then it conjures to me illumination. And the first seems, well, not Christian healthy, and the next seems just weird. I mean, like, you're not supposed to be famous. We're in humble competitions, aren't we, to prove that we're really more humble than each other? And that means that beautiful people have to say that they're ugly, or clever people have to say that they're really dim-witted. So I think I'm not sure I understand the fame thing, and the illuminosity in terms of what Christians talk about just seems weird. Well, like, am I supposed to really walk around like an electric light bulb if I have the glory of God, or some kind of glow worm or something? But really, thought about on a deeper level, could it be that rather than to be famous with just other fickle people, maybe people who know the glory of God have just become famous with God. And they live their life in a way that they say, I am known, I'm appreciated, I'm noticed, I'm acknowledged by God, and that's enough. To be famous with God is to have the very glory of God, and I don't think that's to be proud. In fact, it's really the gift of pleasure of the inferior before the superior. Think of a little child when they do something right and we praise them, a 1 or 2 year old where we say, nice job, do it again. Is it not the most delightful and beautiful and natural expression of a child to be known and to be appreciated and to be noticed by one who is their senior and superior? Not just children, but dogs and horses have this ability too, do they not? I think I told you once about our female dog, George. And when we named her George, one of my brothers said, Dad, how do you know the difference between a boy and a girl dog? He said, all right, George it is. So George the girl, one time, my dad was trying to teach this dog how to get a newspaper. She went out and she got a newspaper, and we scratched her ears, and my dad made her steak. He did. And the next day, she brought 3 newspapers. I'm not kidding you. I mean, if dogs can do this, if dogs react to this, then maybe to know this is to know the most beautiful thing in all the world. You are my beloved daughter. You are my beloved son. To hear those words and to believe them is the scriptural account of the glory of God. To know that eternally you matter to a God who would come from earth, from heaven to earth, to a cross and an empty tomb for you, is enough to know that you have received the notice of God, the very glory of God. And if that be true, then would not illumination then make sense? To sparkle, to shine, to twinkle, to have distinct intention, to be fully alive. I see that glory in many of you, the way you greet children, the way you touch each other sometimes, the care of people who suffer, meals that are extended, logos fun. Sometimes I'll look at you when you're not noticing and I think, you just sparkle. Some of you just plain sparkle with the love of Christ. I wonder, is this experience then something for Jesus, this peek behind the veil, so that he would have strength for what lies ahead of him, for he would suffer many things in the days to come, when he is left behind by his friends, when he is abandoned by the masses, as he walks the streets of Jerusalem with a cross on his back, as people spit and mock, I wonder, can he feel the cool mountain mist and the words of his father saying, this is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. If you can hear that voice in the midst of your own suffering, does not that mountaintop curtain bring things into perspective? This one who would walk into the fury of humanity could now close his eyes and feel the love of his father. This one who would receive the brutal beatings that were intended for us would let the mountain and the smell of affirmation of his own sonship be mingled in with the blows of hatred. Maybe, I wonder, maybe this was an experience just for Jesus. And maybe it was for the disciples, so that when they too walked their way of trouble, they would know that they were born to radiate and to shine and to bring luster to this broken world. Maybe after this, as the disciples processed, they would say in that moment, it was all that we had ever looked for. The term had been over, holiday had begun, and now new beginnings were taking formation for the disciples. Maybe the hope of listening to each other and to God's voice. Maybe they just didn't even know or aware that they were living out their own calling and found themselves remarkably and beautifully in the very presence of God with each other, loving, caring, and being changed from the inside out themselves. Let me close with this true story. So at Royal Family Camp, this camp that we're going to do this summer with children from the foster system, in midweek, there's a tradition at some of the camps where we have a talent show. And honestly, it's a talentless show in most situations. I mean, there's kids who just, like, they throw a football and then everybody claps. You know, there's kids that dance and it doesn't really resemble dancing. There's children who try to memorize poetry and then goof it all up. And then I'll never forget Tony. It was a young boy who decided he was going to sing a cappella. And I was so worried for him. He was one of the kids that seemed to get picked on and giggled at. And I worried that he would make a mess and that the kids wouldn't clap. So I told all the adults there, make sure we clap for Tony. I mean, just go crazy no matter what he does, no matter how awful. This beautiful little boy stood up on the stage all by himself and sang this song. And just for a moment, the curtain was pulled back. And I thought I heard the voice of an angel. I mean it. He had this beautiful voice, and in his voice he sang a song, a camp song, that called kids to the suffering of Jesus. And when he was done, all the children, before the adults could move, got up and began to cheer. I had never rooted, even for my own children, as hard as I rooted for Tony in that moment. And just for a moment, the curtain was pulled back, and the glory of God rested on a child who knew what he was born for in that moment. And he gave us a moment, and it seemed like, just for a moment, he sparkled and dazzled and twinkled with the real glory of God. Pray with me. So the most dim-witted of us, God, here, have been given these moments, real peaks behind the curtain that make us realize that depression one day will be over and deathbed scenes will end and aging will delight into all that we were meant to be until these moments become complete realities. On a morning like this, we will trust you, and we will invite you, God, to help us to sparkle and to shine with your goodness and to take in the fragility and the preciousness of life best we can in Christ. Amen.